It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So you haven't seen Madam Web, right?
No. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Are you gonna, like, when it's on streaming?
I mean, it's possible. I guess we... it's possible. I don't know if we will.
I hope you do, because I really want your take on it. Because I'm not going to see it.
Oh, you're not going to?
Oh, no.
Well, why do you want my take on it?
Because I'm fascinated by it, but not enough to watch it.
Oh.
No, I have pretty much come out and stated for me to watch a new superhero anything, somebody who I trust has to tell me this is better than basically all the existing MCU. And yeah, then I will think about it. And with this one, this is worse than basically all the existing MCU.
That's what they say.
Which means I'm definitely not going to watch it, but I'm really intrigued to have other people watch it.
Well, I mean, I don't really get superhero fatigue. I mean, I like those stories. It doesn't really matter, but doesn't mean I'm going to enjoy everyone that I see, obviously. It used to be when I liked something, I actually tolerated less it being bad. I had friends who, like, they liked a particular genre, and like they would like anything in that genre, no matter how terrible it was. But for me, if I liked a genre, I didn't just like it, but I wanted it to be good, and I was almost insulted when it wasn't. Nowadays, you're
the food critic from Ratatouille.
Sure. Nowadays, I have noticed there are some things that, even if they're really bad, I will not praise them like these friends of mine who seem to like everything that comes out. I'll be honest about how bad it is, but I might still be able to enjoy it. I don't know if that's
and
a
that's
recent
why I want you to see it. Like, you also like things that no. Did you ever see Morbius?
Yeah.
Did we talk about that?
Probably not.
How did you feel about it?
About Morbius?
Yeah.
I don't remember feeling as strongly negative about it as most people. And see, this is why I'm realizing that I can get something out of most superhero things, really, even if they're awful. But I had the same criticisms as everybody else, even with, you know, not hearing those criticisms first, but like seeing it, having criticisms, hearing other people's, like, yep, I had those problems too. They just didn't bother me like they bothered everybody else. I will probably never see it again, and I would never recommend it to anybody. But I guess, you know, I guess I enjoy superhero stuff enough that even if it's bad, I kind of have fun watching it or whatever. So, like, some people are just downright insulted by how bad a thing is. And I have felt that way. But apparently when it comes to superhero movies, that doesn't happen. I can get something out of it. I don't know why.
No, I have. I mean, I'm more and more, whether or not I like a film and whether or not I think a film is good are becoming more and more detached from each other.
Yeah, that's happening to me, yeah, too.
I think I'm pretty much done with superheroes. I've discovered it's not a genre for me in general, because it frequently plays with themes I just don't give a shit about. But also, I feel like superhero movies especially have hit a point where it's not that it's bad. It's that it's bad and I've seen it 1,000 times.
Yeah,
and I'm just bored.
Well, I know some people like a genre because they want to see the same thing over and over again, really. They just like to
and
see
I have
twist.
Other ones like that.
Yeah.
most found footage paranormal investigation ones. They're also much shorter and cheaper to watch. But no, I like those too. But
I'd say another genre for me like that is the whole space cowboy thing. I mean, I think the reason I can watch just about any Star Wars thing and get something out of it isn't so much because it's Star Wars, it's because it's that genre.
Space cowboy.
Yeah, that I can enjoy. Yeah.
I like space cowboys. It's not been played out yet for me as a genre. Space West, Cowboys of Mumesa, that kind of thing. No, I was rewatching the Honest trailer for it, and Madam Web looks so like bafflingly bad.
Well,
like it hits levels that I'm like, I didn't think you were allowed to cheap out like that on a real movie.
Well, it might be telling that I don't often watch honest trailers or pitch meetings for things that I haven't seen, even if I don't think I'm going to see it. But sometimes, I'm so sure that either I won't see it or it won't matter that I'll go ahead and watch it. And I think I have watched the Madam Web ones because not because I didn't think I would see it, but because I thought there's no way it's going to matter.
Yeah. For me, it's if I haven't seen it and I'm going to, I wait. So like I waited on the Marvels ones.
Yeah.
I know I'm not going to, whatever.
Right.
And more, I know I'm not going to. Because a lot of it's superhero movies and shit. Yeah. So.
But I mean, like, we didn't finish She-Hulk. We didn't even finish that.
Oh, wow.
And we haven't seen the second, or we haven't seen past the, I don't know how many seasons there have been. We haven't seen past the first season of Loki. And we didn't finish
Miss Marvel. There have been two, and it's done now, as far as.
Okay. And I don't remember, like, She-Hulk being, like, particularly offensive or anything, but there wasn't. We didn't find anything particularly compelling. We watched, there was one scene, like, so some people complain about the scene in She-Hulk. Can I just talk about it? It won't be a spoiler really, will it? It's like.
If this is spoiling She-Hulk for you people, you're better off.
But there's a famous scene that some people love and some people hate. And I happen to really like it where, you know, for some reason, she's not having the same problems with being fully present when she transforms and controlling the transformation, like her cousin or whatever. And her what she's pointing out is that because she's a woman, she's had to deal with certain types of stress and anger her whole life in a way that sort of kind of makes her well-suited for this. And her male cousin, you know, he had to learn how to deal with anger and control anger because there were so many things as a man that he didn't have to deal with, right?
Yes. Yes.
I thought that was particularly smart, brilliant, even.
That scene was the promise that was the show. That scene showed up in a lot of trailers. That scene made us all go, oh, hell yeah.
But to me, the rest of this show didn't really live up to that, even to the extent where we kind of stopped watching.
No, I think that is accurate. Yeah. I am very happy with She-Hulk for what it tried to do. I am very happy with She-Hulk for the things that it managed to do in terms of breaking certain barriers to be in a Disney show and all that. I do not think it successfully did what it tried to do, and I was not particularly into the end result. So I watched the whole thing, but all of those caveats and respect where it's due for it, I do not think it was a good show.
Well, and we didn't stop watching like out of hate or anger or disgust or anything like that. It's just there were other things that were competing with it and they were more compelling, basically. And so we just stopped watching it. But if there hadn't been anything really competing, we would have finished it. I mean, it wasn't so bad not to finish. It wasn't good enough to compete with other better shows that were on, so it sort of dropped off our radar is really what happened. I think Miss Marvel was the same. It's like there wasn't really anything particularly wrong with it, and we like, both of us like superhero things, but it wasn't compelling enough to keep us watching compared to other things that were on, you know. There's only so much time in a day.
On my way out, she's my favorite actor in the MCU, so you should probably go back and watch it. I haven't watched any of it, but Now I love her. I'm still not going to watch it.
Because see, we have
hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast that really had to cut short that cold open talking about TV shows and movies. Because spoilers, we're going to talk about some TV shows and movies.
Yeah, that's what we do.
I'm Tony,
and I'm William, and this is episode 682.
For those of you just joining us, yeah, we're going to talk about some TV shows and movies. There might be an email in there that people send, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever they want. And the hat is magic. Did I mention there's a hat? There's a hat. It's magic. Has that email address. We might read it. You're caught up.
I was just going to say, I haven't seen the Marvels either, so. I suspect I will, but I don't know.
Yeah. Trish liked it a little better than me. So there's that going for it.
Well, I liked what was it even called? Captain Marvel? Was that what it was called? The first
Captain Marvel?
Yeah, yes. I liked it. A lot of people didn't, but.
I very much liked it at the time. I am since
I mean, I don't know if it'd stand up if I watched it again or not, but yeah. I thought it was fine.
Well, and for the record, I haven't watched it again. I think I mentioned this before. I'm not a huge fan of Brie Olsen. Brie Olsen. Again, I think that's a porn star, whatever. Very close names. Brie Larson. I'm just starting to see, like, everything I see her do seems to be very similar. Sort of a low energy mumblecore vibe that
maybe. I mean, I've seen her in, I think, one other thing, and she was different, but.
Well, that's the thing, and I haven't seen her in a bunch, but when I do, I'm like,
Yeah,
maybe I'll have I to. Don't know. It doesn't matter. I don't think that will stop me from watching a different movie she's in. And if it's a superhero movie, I'm not gonna watch it.
Oh wait, she was in Kong Skull Island. She was in that.
Yeah. See, I think we've had this exact conversation
before. Yeah. And I think she was a little similar to. All right. Well, I don't know.
So, how is your week?
I mean, you know, that's another problem. There's so much going on. There's not a lot of time for things. But we did see Spaceman, that Adam Sandler
thing. Oh.
Have you heard of that?
Yes. It's a great paradox, because that trailer with anyone else in it, I would have already seen it. And because he's there, I may not see it.
Oh.
But I'm very curious what you thought. So,
I thought it's okay. So, I'm kind of the same way. I, you know, seeing that was Adam Sandler was in it was not a draw at all, and in fact, it'll pretty much
which the is opposite. Not to say that he's not capable of doing dramatic parts. I've seen him in things. He is.
Right.
Most of them aren't for me.
Yeah. He did a good job in it. I mean. I can't think of anyone who would have done a better job, really. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. I'm not sure who I would recommend it to, because to me, it was like, if you like science fiction, like space science fiction, and, you know, really well done in terms of like the technical stuff, I think you're going to like it for those reasons. Technically it's very good. I think really good. Technically, just the story didn't really resonate with me. And the story wasn't really a science fiction story. In the sense that like a Asimov or a Clark story is a science fiction, like the story is a little bit about the science, right? The science matters, the science plays a part in what's going on.
This was a non-science fiction story set in a science fiction setting.
Kind of, that's what it, and but I mean, lots of things. Star Wars is that way, really. I mean, Star Wars isn't
Yeah.
science fiction. It's a fantasy set in a science fiction place, basically. And so this is kind of a, I think it would be like a romance even set in this place is really what it is. Not that the romance takes place in that place, but the story is about a romance, really, is about a his relationship with his wife, even though she's not present with him in the events of the film. That's really
So we
what
can
it's about.
assume it's Drew Barrymore.
No, it's if I could remember her name, you'd know who it was, but I can't remember. So it's hard for me to gauge who would like it or who would not like it or why. Like, I have no idea if you'd like it. No idea.
I suspect it's going to float us by. I suspect we're going to spend time going, yeah, maybe, and then never do it. Because that seems to be how it is being. That seems to be the position it's holding in society as a whole.
That
So,
movie, it's like not really
well, at
catching
least in
fire.
terms of what I've heard, like the few people I've heard, they're like, yeah, maybe. But
Well,
like now that it's out and about and nobody's like, oh my God, you got it. Like this is the first I've heard of it since it came out.
it's like
I'm like, it's not setting the world on fire.
if this was like the first dramatic role Sandler had ever done, it might catch fire because people were like, oh my God, he was so amazing in this dramatic role. But he's already done dramatic. I mean, we know he can do it. So it's not some big shock or really impressive that he can do it. I can say that this is, and I haven't seen him in other dramatic roles. I just know he's done them and can do them. I do have to say, I didn't get any sense of Adam Sandler in this role. Like like usually in his movies, whoever he's playing is he's pretty much just playing Adam Sandler. And I didn't, I could easily forget that this was Adam Sandler playing this role. But to me, that's just competent acting. That's not like mind-blowing great acting or whatever. I mean, the role wasn't didn't really demand really big scenes or anything. The fact that he just showed up and did the job, I mean, good for him. And it's impressive that he does have that kind of range, but it wasn't like some Oscar worthy performance. Well, the script itself wasn't, the story itself wasn't like that. It was just a pretty straightforward, basic story. I think the only thing that would make anyone think that it was something special would be, like I said, the technical aspects of it were actually pretty impressive. It looked amazing, and the things that it achieved in how it looked and how it was shot and edited and stuff, I think were probably really difficult. Including some CGI effects that you could barely tell were CGI effects. They were so good. I mean, you just know they were CGI because they had to be, basically. Maybe
Adam
it'll win
Sandler
awards.
just doesn't have that many fingers.
Maybe it'll win some technical awards, and if it does, it probably deserved them. But like the script and the story and just the general arc of the characters and the plot, nothing special. I don't. But to some people, it might be really moving, that love story, whatever. But I don't really like that stuff, so didn't do anything for me.
Adam Sandler's fans online are gonna destroy us. We're gonna get
No, I
doxxed.
don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, as long we don't, we have a very limited but tight listener base. None of you breathe a word of this to
To the
Adam
Adam
Sandler's online
Sandler
fans.
fans. Well,
I think
if
they're
you
called Billies or Madisons, one of
if
those.
you happen to see it and you really love it, you can tell me, but I don't think it was anything to write home about. How about you? How was your week?
Happy Gilmore and Associates. Seen any of those movies? Very little. I mean, I had various medical appointments. They were fine, but they weren't that interesting. I did finish Three Body Problem,
Oh, okay.
the book. TM. And immediately went to read about the TV show. And immediately found out that the year before the TV show, there was another TV show in China. And it was very well received, and a very fairly accurate adaptation of the story.
Well, that's a little surprising to me because isn't the story kind of critical of China and the revolution and all that?
Sort of.
Mm.
It is fairly straightforward in its version of the vision of how things were in the 60s.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, the whole original story, again, Chinese. So there's a lot of positive that can come out of that as well. But it is an accurate it is accurate to say that it thinks things went real crazy during the actual People's Revolution. And I think perhaps even the Chinese government is willing to say, yeah, things got crazy then. Like, it's not critical of the modern government.
Oh,
So,
okay. Okay.
and so I read that whole thing, which was 30 episodes, and was a pretty accurate adaptation in my based on
Huh.
Wikipedia.
I wonder if a person can see that somewhere, like on Netflix or something.
I don't know. I mean,
I'd be
probably in
interested in
China,
that.
but
I'd be interested in that.
and then I read all the stuff about the 8-part episode, and then I had a fun part because my sister had just it was almost done with it, and so she and I had a conversation and just compared notes. We're like, oh, that does happen, but it's with this person, and oh yeah, no, that doesn't happen. Oh, that happens because this, but in the book, it happens because of this. And it was just a weird discussion for that. It's very different, but also very the same. It's been very TV-ized. The big thing is very intentionally, and apparently with the blessing of the author or whatever, they took the story out of China. Like, some of the characters are still from China, but they made it global. And they changed a lot of the names and things like that. And if you go to Wikipedia, it'll actually say so and so in parentheses based on the novel character so and so. And then, and sometimes they split them up. Sometimes a couple characters become one. The character I talked about as the protagonist is sort of two characters. Like, there is one that's definitely an analog for that. But then some of the things that person did, this person did. In general, the science is dumbed down. The plot is dumbed down. Everything is sort of sexied up a little bit. There are some things that change because I'm just like, that's cooler for TV. There's a lot more interpersonal relationship stuff that doesn't exist. It's fine. It does make for some real weird. I would say the moral questions are dumbed down. There's a lot of things that were like people made very serious decisions, and throughout the rest of the book had to live with those decisions. And in the TV show, like, just a thing happened, or there was a misunderstanding, or things like that. We took out a lot of the roadblocks that the physics had involved by just adding in a couple of things that would make things easier for the story.
Well, I think some of these things you're talking about dumbing down certain things created plot holes in the TV show that probably the book didn't have.
Possibly. But yeah, we just simplified some things. The father of a child was not particularly interesting outside of that, so we just got rid of that character and made one of the other characters the father of a child. The whole thing you talked about with college people, that just didn't happen. That's not there. But I do want to talk about the most interesting difference. So you've watched the entire thing.
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Yeah.
So I do want to put out the caveat. This is based on a trilogy of books. And I have read only the first one. But they definitely like continue the story because actually in the Chinese adaptation of the book, it kept referencing like, and then this happens in parentheses, they're like leading to this book and whatever. So it's all connected. So that definitely is a possible explanation for what I am about to say. The TV show you watched is 8 episodes long, with the exception of a few tiny epilogues. The book ends at the end of episode 5.
Oh.
Everything else that happens, again, with a few tiny epilogues, I don't know what the fuck any of that is about. Like, and it's not like things that happened earlier when they were in the book. Like, all of that is, pardon the pun, alien to me. Like, you just end with you finally figure out what's going on, and then some epilogues, and then it's over. All the things about trying to do things about it, it's not there. So again, it might continue on in the series, and I know people talk about it as season 1, and I think it's done well, so it might get more stuff. But yeah, as far as the book it's supposedly adapted from, it finishes just over halfway through.
One issue, maybe we can talk about this without spoilers. One issue that in the show has to do with alien technology, from the alien group or whatever technology, some technology being like almost unbelievably advanced, while other tech of their technology is purported to have a certain limitations that don't seem to, like, if you have this technology that can do this, why can this technology only do this? I mean, it seems like in the TV show, this alien group is portrayed as almost omnipotent in some ways, and yet limited in other ways that those things don't seem to go together. It doesn't make sense that they would have certain limitations.
I would imagine either, I mean, I don't know exactly what you mean here, but I would imagine I can think of three possible scenarios. Some of the really advanced stuff for the TV show isn't in the book. And I know that's true to a degree with one or two specific things,
Okay.
because it just made the storytelling easier, so they did it, but it doesn't happen. I would guess that they don't go into options as they don't go into the details of why they have one but not the other. Because
Right,
there
yeah.
are some things that you literally are present while they develop this technology. Because lots of flashbacks
But
and
as you were
things.
reading it, you didn't see if the portrayal of the aliens and their capabilities as having any kind of weird contradictions or like, wait, how
No,
does
but this does bring me to my third option. There are some things where people are like, why is that like that? Like some people do point out, like, if they can do this, why can't they do this or whatever? And they have explanations, which again, in a TV show, you might not have bothered with the timing of. So I'm guessing it's one of those three options. If you want to be more specific offline, I can
Well,
come up with something.
one idea that I thought might be operating here is that one set of technologies you can explain with some quasi scientific sort of subatomic what am I trying to say? Quantum. You can with some quasi scientific quantum explanations, where the
We
other
have a
set of
lot of that.
technologies are going to be governed by relativity level science, right? And as people who follow physics know, that there's actually not any good way to make quantum physics and relativity work together, which might suggest that an advanced civilization could have some crazy technology when it comes to quantum science and considerations, but they're still going to be bound by certain by relativity in the same way that say we are. And so that's why there would be a gap between what they can do in this realm versus what they can do in this realm. But that wasn't clear either, and I didn't know if that explanation would be made in the show, which of course it wasn't. So it felt like just a big plot hole and a contradiction that they didn't think they needed to explain.
I am much more confident this is addressed in the books.
Okay.
You're getting at the underlying science that explains the entire premise of the books, so
Oh, maybe I'd like to read this.
it's not bad. It's very different. It's very different. The base plot elements are the same. The same things essentially happen in both places, drastically different stories being told.
Because a lot of the science fiction premise of it, I thought was interesting and clever, and I really wanted to watch to see how that unfolded. But then, actually, but now that you mention it, it was kind of around the middle that it started to kind of like, we don't care about the science fiction anymore. We're just, this is all about the drama now. And so there were a lot of things that didn't get explained. And like the first part, the science aspect, like the science was, it was like I was saying before, a science fiction story where the science is part of the story. That's what the first four or five episodes were. And then right, and then after that, none of that mattered
Yeah, that was
anymore.
the first book.
Yeah.
But it spent a lot more time on a lot of details of it. And I mean, they just moved some stuff around in ways that makes sense again. Like well, this happens in a lot of ways, but for example, randomly, there's a character that makes a very big decision and it has huge impact. And in the book, we spend more time with this character over time and have them, after that decision has been made, like reconsider at several points, was this right? Was this wrong? As things happen to them. In the TV show, we just front loaded a bunch of those so that we would definitely be on this character's side when they made this decision. And then it was done. We didn't need, like, we used that purely for motivation purposes and not for a larger picture of said character. And again, time frame, it's like, I get it. You're the one who taught me years ago. I think when they did the Dresden Files TV show, like, there are things you do just because it's better for a TV show. And
Right,
at the
right.
time, that seemed really vague. But as you pointed out specific things, ever since then, my view on that kind of stuff, I'm like, oh, well, yeah, you have to do that. It's a TV show or it's a
Right,
movie.
right, right, right.
Which is why I think even more and more nowadays, it's very important for me to pick carefully which version. Speaking of which, now I'm on to the second Lockwood novel. Very excited about that. I didn't play a lot of video games or anything. I did watch two movies that I think we're going to want to talk about.
Okay.
One is called Baghead, which I had kind of been looking forward to, and finally dropped on Shudder. Shudder's doing more bankrolling of some movies and things, and sometimes they're showing up other places before they show up on Shudder, but they do eventually get there. This one, estranged child finds out that they have inherited from their absentee father a pub, and in the basement there's a scary lady, and if you do certain ritual things, she can sh bring back the dead, and people could come and talk to the dead. But if you do it for too long, she goes nuts, and also you now are trapped here, and you have to take care of it. It's now your problem. Sorry. Hijinks ensue. I'm not saying it's a generic plot, but hopefully those details fit in. You get the sense of what kind of movie this is.
I think so.
Yes. Didn't super care, except the lead is I don't remember the actor's name, but Ciri from Witcher. The little blonde teen is the little blonde young adult in this. And it was fun to see her play different to type, and she did well. Like I wasn't being like, oh my God, it's Ciri. Like I had to remember that's who that was. I think she did well. It's fine. It could use with more lore a little bit. Like we do explain what's going on, but in real generic sense. It could do with a lot more punch up of relationships. A lot of them took some big emotional swings that seemed kind of out of nowhere because I'm like, we haven't established this, or just left questions, just like, what are these two people to each other? It also had some predictable things. It had a few, like, that's a bad horror movie decision you made right there. Like, that's not, people wouldn't make that decision. But it's fine. They spent a lot of time on the atmosphere and the visuals, and I think it did really well. And none of these things were horrible, no pun intended. It's an easy miss, but it's fine. It's good. Yeah, you go watch it.
Called what again?
Baghead, because the woman or entity or whatever has a burlap sack over her head, and part of the thing is she transforms, and then you pull it off. So you never see what she looks like originally.
But then she resembles the deceased
The dead
person.
person. Yeah. But after 2 minutes, then she can start doing crazy shit. So you gotta watch out for that. Of course, people go over 2 minutes way more than they don't. But bad shit does happen, so they're not wrong.
I mean, it actually sounds kind of promising, honestly.
Yeah. Watch the trailer. It's gonna look kind of promising. And
Yeah, it doesn't really
it's not
deliver though.
bad. It's
Okay.
not bad.
Okay.
Not sorry I watched it,
Do you
but
think
it's
they'll make
not.
more?
Probably not.
No.
I mean, we did end on a direction that we could definitely do sequels, although they'd be different, but good. Baghead 2, Electric Boogaloo. Baghead 3, Bag Harder. Whatever. A good day to Baghead. Baghead 3D.
know you're
It's
not
like
done, are you? You could just go
the
all day.
bag's coming right at you. The bag. So in D&D, this last session, we were going around investigating a spooky house for the second time, is a long story. Anyway, my character now has the ability to cast detect magic just whenever the fuck she feels like it. It's a warlock thing. She doesn't have spell slots or any of that stuff. She can just do it.
Don't have to
And
roll,
so
you
we're,
just do it.
no, just do it. And so we're going around this house and I'm leading the way. So I like open the door, look inside, and then bam, hit it with the detect magic, see what's going on. Now, when I say bam like that, I have a very specific thing in my head because I was raised in that time frame. I specifically have the voice of Tommy Davidson, renowned comedic and sketch actor, first popularized on the show In Living Color, handing somebody, I believe, a business card. He had a recurring character who would show like their card or whatever, and that was all the thing is you were waiting for it because he's like, hey, bam. And that was like his thing.
I kind
And
of remember
as
that.
sketches went on, they'd get like longer and it'd be a real time, and the other person was saying bam, every time. And so this is what I hear in my head.
Yeah.
None of the people I'm with know what I'm talking
Yeah,
about.
right.
They're all too young slash my wife who can't remember anything. But I keep doing it and I start doing it the way he would do it.
Oh,
so like Stephanie's and I'll be like, okay, we go into the store. And I was like, Stephanie. And she's like, yeah. And I just look at her through the Zoom cam. And then I go, make them all jump. Or other times they'd be like, you going out in the room? I'm like, yep, open it up. just to catch them every time. And they start giggling and all this. And I'm like, you don't even get the joke. It's way funnier for me because you don't even know who I'm copying.
That's good.
All right, let's get to the meat of the issue here. We watched Frankenstein, the definitive one, the Aaron Eckhart one. I'm kidding. We did not watch I, comma Frankenstein.
Oh.
No, we watched the James Whale 1931 Boris Karloff original Frankenstein.
Had you never seen it before?
We had never seen it before.
What'd you think?
It's not great. I hear the second one's better.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
It's not great. It is this. It is so iconic, though. It is so weird to see the monster and be like, oh shit, I'm witnessing the birth of this is the fright. Like every doodle, every Halloween costume, every sketch was just doing this right here. And you're like, and it looks it. This is the most Frankenstein ass Frankenstein because he's the original.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the original Igor, who not a lot of people know, is named Fritz.
Right.
Yep. Who's a dick, by the way. We started off kind of on Team Fritz side, but Team Fritz was a dick. Do not feel bad for Fritz. Also, I mean, I guess spoilers, whatever. The flower scene, and he kills the kid, and that's how we get the thing. Nobody talks about the how and why he kills the kid. Most recreations of it are like, the monster saw a kid and the kid was adorable and they were getting along, and then like something happened to scare him or hurt him and he lashed out. No, she was showing him flowers and they were playing with flowers, and she showed him you can throw a flower on and it's a boat now. And so he was like, that's cool. Oh, we're out of flowers? All right. And he fucking picked her up and threw her into water so she'd be a boat.
Mm, pretty much. Yeah.
Like, and then she drowned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tragic. It's also kind of funny. And nobody ever mentions that part.
That it's funny.
Yeah.
It's comical. Yeah.
Yeah, that it is. Like, and it's tragic because he's so innocent and he doesn't know. But it's a little bit of like, oh yeah, they're boats, and Frankenstein's like, woo! And he's like, oh no, we're out of flowers. He's like, no problem, you're a boat now. Are we done with this game?
I mean, like, the whole thing's kind of comical on that level, though, honestly.
Well, also, some of the acting is good.
Sure.
All the rest of the acting? Good. The little ingenue in it, bless her heart, is terrible.
I mean, everybody knows how I feel about Mary Shelley's story and how that it's not the, you know,
or as it is listed in the credits here, Mrs. Percy S. Shelley.
Right. That the film
that was disconcerting.
Doesn't really accurately represent in any way that story. However, I really do like the 1931 and the sequel. I mean, I like them both as their stories in their own right. It doesn't bother me that it uses the name Frankenstein in the story. So I don't really blame the movies for how Mary Shelley's original work is misunderstood and misrepresented. I think the films are actually very good. I'm huge fans of them. I'm huge fans of that character and creature. I think people should just read the original, or filmmakers who want to say this is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein ought to do a better job of adapting it if that's what they're going to do. I don't think Whale intended really for the, you know, for this to be like a faithful adaptation of Shelley's work. He was taking all kinds of stories and sort of smashing them together to make this. It was just a and it was interesting, I thought, and I do think the second one's better. Are you going to see the second one?
The second one is quite better. I haven't seen it yet.
Are you going to
double feature it?
Well,
I hear the second one really leans into obvious metaphor for homosexuality, as opposed to the
first. Yeah, people say that. I mean, I don't know if, you know, I don't know if I noticed that when I saw it. I mean, yeah, I'd heard that, and so I was kind of even looking for, like, what are they talking about here? But it, on the other hand, it's probably, I mean, given who Whale was and what his own life and stuff, surely that would come out in his work. I mean, I think the people who see that are probably right. But well, I had a harder time seeing
it. You're still deeply, deeply in the closet. When you finally come out, if you rewatch it, you'll probably see it very differently. You are deep, deep in the closet.
I just, yeah, it did. It wasn't obvious to me. But I'm, deep. You know, and people even would say, well, there's this, this, and this. And I believe them. I believe that those are probably things, but they didn't, you know, there's a lot of things I see that I spot the subtext too. It's like, oh, I see what that's kind of a metaphor for, but this one just doesn't really hit you over the head. I mean, but I mean, when people point it out, I tend to think, oh yeah, you're probably right about that. That probably did reflect his own personal views and stuff. I don't doubt it. It just didn't jump out to me.
You know why?
That's not the reason.
So deep.
But you have fun deep. Saying it, so I won't steal your deep. Joy.
So deep, we may never see the surface. But yeah, that's pretty much it. There hasn't been a lot else going on. So we should definitely do an email. We are running low on them, but
yeah, see what I can find.
While they're here, we will enjoy them.
Jasmine wants to know, what are your thoughts on Buddhist psychotherapy?
I mean, that's a good joke. Buddhist psychotherapy. That's funny. I like that. What are your thoughts on Buddhist psychotherapy, William? Almost a doctor.
So there's a lot of ways to talk about this. And I think I have said in the recent past that there's currently discussion, I don't know if you'd call it debate, it's discussion about the role of spiritual beliefs or religious beliefs, or, you know, in the case of Buddhism, some people dispute. Well, some people would say that's more of a philosophy or a philosophical or worldview, maybe metaphysical, I guess, would fit. But no matter what label you put on it, the appropriateness of those things in therapy at all. Like if someone comes to therapy, regardless of their background, when it comes to those types of esoteric beliefs or ideas or whatever, should that even be a part of therapy? I mean, the person either has symptoms of, say, depression, anxiety, or whatever, or they don't. You can either diagnose them for those things or you can't. And if you can diagnose them, there's evidence-based treatments, and none of the development of understanding symptomology, diagnosis, or treatment has ever had anything to do with you know, metaphysics. I mean, some could argue there's some philosophical stuff involved in some of that development, and certainly there's cultural things involved, but, you know, direct references to, say, Christianity or Islam or any other kind of metaphysical worldview is just, it's irrelevant. So there's no place for it in therapy. That you don't have very many people arguing that anymore, but, you know, that's one side, that's one extreme side of the conversation. And the other extreme side is pretty much the exact opposite, that, and that side even rejects things like diagnosis or the idea of evidence-based treatment. You know, a person shows up and you deal with it, whatever issues they present. And many of the people in that camp would say that they're all spiritual issues. And therefore, if a person is a Buddhist, or if, you know, if they seem to benefit from concepts from that worldview, then that's what you use. That's what you talk about. And if you, as the therapist, aren't familiar with that worldview, you either refer them to someone who is, that can help them, or you learn it. You know, you do a little work, do a little homework, and figure it out. So you can help them. You can help them sort of shape their own therapeutic approach with that worldview. Now, more specifically to Buddhism and Jazz, the subject line is no self-help, you know, the joke there being that, you know, in many Buddhist approaches, you know, the self is the ego, right, is kind of a thing you need to transcend and get past. Whereas a lot of therapeutic approaches are all about developing the ego and self-actualization, almost affirming the existence of the ego. Although some would argue that most approaches are trying to get a person to a place that self-actualization actually is already very close to the Buddhist idea than a lot of people realize. But again, there are a lot of different ideas in Buddhism and a lot of different types of Buddhists. If the Buddhist you're working with believes, you know, that their life goal and course is to overcome the ego, and they're going to kind of reject any type of approach you take that talks about self-actualizing or self this or self that, because they're going to perceive their problem as being too concerned with the self, too, you know, focused on their own development, their own cognitions, and their own whatever. They want to transcend that, and that's what they see enlightenment, nirvana, as being. Well, then you just, again, you either help them find a practicing Buddhist that can help them on their spiritual walk, or you educate yourself to the point where you can be the person that they need. And that's really going to be all up to them. So the question of whether or not, there's basically two broad ways of answering the question of how Buddhism is going to impact the course of the treatment. And one extreme is it's not going to impact it at all, because you're going to ignore that as a practitioner. And the other is it's going to matter as much as the client wants it to matter, and then you're just going to follow their lead.
For those of you like me who aren't Jazz, and we're just, I'm going to guess, mostly planning your shopping lists in your head during that part, I want to assure you that's what the email sender wanted. That's exactly the sort of answer she was going for. She is most likely delighted right now. We're here to serve. So don't worry. Don't think that if you sent in an email, I would let him get away with any of that shit. I only do it because I know specifically that is the kind of thing jazz wanted to hear. I'm sure it was very enriching for her. Well done, Will.
Okay.
But if you send something in, I am cutting that shit off. Do not worry. I'll be like, this is not what they wrote in for. Who do you think they are, jazz? I'll say. So I don't want you to worry. Yes, just the idea of Buddhist psychotherapy. I'm like, they don't like the psyche. Stop it. I don't see why it couldn't work. Because you're still trying to get the psyche to the head to a certain space, and if that space is extinguished, that's fine.
Well, also attachments, right? Oh, you've got to. A lot of therapy is specifically involved in helping you cope with your attachments. And if by coping you mean letting them go in the Buddhist sense, well, that's just as valid as anything else.
I will say, actually, as somebody who called themselves a Buddhist for about a year and a half in junior high, and who was married to somebody who tried for a real long time, philosophically, Buddhism matters a fair bit to us here, and I take those principles into my own personal mental health journey. A lot of things about attachment, about the sense of self and where that boundary lies with everything around me, about concepts of moderation and what that means, of middle paths between extremes and things like that. A lot of that stuff is useful to me, so that's good.
And
Now,
ethics,
sorry.
morals, and ethics connected to that philosophy, all
I'm not super into morals or ethics.
that.
But I mean, they're there. Yeah, if you want them, Buddhism's got them. If you're like, if that's a deal breaker for you, like it like I know a lot of people get turned off nihilism for that exact reason, and I love nihilism, but if you're like, I'm not into it, I'm like, I get that. May I suggest Buddhism?
Yes.
What's it gonna take to get you into a Buddhism today before you leave? You want morals and ethics? We got morals and ethics over here. I understand the nihilism's not necessarily for everyone. So she's a lot of philosophy. Some people, that's more than they want there. They just want something to get them from A to B. Perhaps Buddhism. Yada yada yada, middle path joke, blah blah blah. Now, if there is specifically a burgeoning school of psychotherapy specifically based around Buddhism that we wouldn't just call church, please let us know, Jazz, or anybody else, if you think you know or know better than Jazz. I would love a good fight out there. I don't provide a good fight for Jazz. She asks things and I respond, and then she's done with me. So
I
I
mean, you
need
make
somebody who will really put her in her place. And right now all we have is William, and he's been busy.
a good point about
I don't know why I said put her in her place. That sounds way too specifically misogynist in a very strange way. I apologize, Jazz. I don't know why that was the phrasing I used.
You make a good point about, I mean, a lot of times if someone needs what could be described as therapy in a particular philosophy, worldview, metaphysics, or whatever, they find a pastor, a priest, they find a practitioner, a priest level or a priestly practitioner in that area, and they are advised by that person. They don't see a licensed therapist, which makes sense. Why would they? Why wouldn't they talk to their pastor or priest
Well,
or
if you're
monk or
like this,
whatever?
this school of thought is literally how I want to be living in my life,
Right,
then maybe
right.
I will take my problems to the expert in this school of thought.
Yep, exactly. Yep. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, licensed therapists see people all the time who because they have assimilated somewhat to this culture, you know, American culture, Western culture, whatever you want to call it, and they start having certain types of feelings that they know the culture calls symptoms, like low mood and or worry. And they know, oh, well, people in this culture go to a therapist, right? And so they'll go to the therapist and they'll be perfectly happy talking to a licensed therapist about those symptoms, but they do want the guidance to conform to Buddhism or Christianity or Islam or whatever it is. And so, like I said, then the therapist is in a position to either say, well, maybe you should go talk to a priest, or you know, figure out how to learn enough about their worldview to advise them in that context.
Trish said a while back, and I don't know if I'm guessing she stole this line, but in most situations, mental illness is just eccentricity to the point at which it conflicts with societal norm.
I mean that there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
I think I've said here that
I mean, and on both sides, like it can be that you're suffering because of your eccentricities in this society. Not that you're necessarily harming society, but
Well, I mean, like, you know, when we studied, you know, childhood onset disorders, you know, for most of them, the first sign that there's a problem is the kids having trouble in school. To the extent that if you imagine a world where the kid, where we don't have, say, public school, we don't, right, or whatever, this was probably not a thing that would ever be noticed or diagnosed. The person would just be adjusted to and or you know maybe you know get a job that suits their temperament or whatever else. And it really makes you wonder, is this only a childhood onset disorder because public school exists, or really any kind of organized school exists? Is that the only reason this is a thing? And they're in, of course, all the diagnoses are a little bit that way. Some of them for like extreme personality disorders and stuff, or schizophrenia, you also understand have a strong cultural basis, because we see historical records where you have accounts of people who are exhibiting this type of symptomology, but they're seen as seers, or they're seen as special
I'll bet I know
spiritual people. Yeah. So
it. But sometimes childhood onset a condition, the first sign is that they murder their parents with an axe. And that's much more straightforward. And you usually don't get a movie out of it.
Right.
But
Granted,
it's the same thing. That butts up against society's views on murdering your parents with an axe. Otherwise, if we
stupid
didn't care
society.
about that, nobody would care. Like it wouldn't be a thing. That'd be
Well,
normal.
okay, but here's another way to look at that. So a kid murders their parents with an axe. The culture that the kid does that in is doesn't like it, thinks it's bad, but also thinks that a demon possessed that child, right? To make that happen, they do some kind of a religious thing to the kid to exorcise the demon or whatever. They're satisfied it worked. The kid's satisfied it worked. And then the kid grows up and is a perfectly productive member of society in
Yeah.
spite of doing that when they were a kid.
Then they never did it again. And you know why? You can't. You can only kill your
Kill your
parents with an
parents
axe one
once.
time. I mean, each parent, but your parents,
Just
that's
saying,
it. So I'm not even sure they needed to bother with the ritual. He was
well,
done. He finished
they didn't want him to kill other people, like grandparents. They're still candidates.
I mean,
And some
it better safe than sorry, but I'm just saying none of us should be surprised. Like, what was he gonna
just
do? No, kill him again. Like that's the horror, that's the epic horror story I want. Kid kills parents with an axe, and then afterwards gets into science so he can learn to resurrect the dead so that he can bring him back so he can murder him again. And be like, I am the only one, I am above God, I'm the only one who could kill my parents twice. Ah,
or
that's my favorite version of
he
Frankenstein.
succeeds in resurrecting them so that, like, I'm not guilty of, you know, now that they're alive, that absolves me of my guilt. But then he can't stand them and he does murder them again.
Double Jeopardy.
Well, right.
Double Jeopardy. Can't stand trial twice. Same crime. Same people.
But yeah, I mean, culture does.
We'll back that up.
Culture definitely plays a part. And see, this is why the people on that other part of the argument that I was talking about that say, well, you know, diagnosis and so-called evidence-based treatments is it's treating mental health the same way you would treat, you know, like if you had a virus or bacteria or whatever, and mental health is just not the same. It's not similar enough that using what they call a medical model to deal with mental health, it doesn't make sense on the face of it because they're not similar enough, but also because they're not the same, you're actually harming the person to diagnose them and to put them through all of this stuff. And what you should do instead
we're is up so close to graduation that you're learning that your job isn't real.
Well, no, it's still real. It's just the methods on that side of the argument are you acclimate yourself to this person's worldview and way of thinking, and you help them the way they would help themselves if they had the capacity to help themselves. Right. So you try to put yourself into their worldview, into their way of thinking about things so that they can find their answers in their own, cultural and psychological context, which, of course, I think is correct.
Because eventually if they kill their parents, it's over.
I actually think that view is correct. I think there might still be not might. I think there is still a place for things like diagnosis and evidence-based treatment, but all of that has to be seen in a very particular context that it often isn't. Sometimes those things are taken in a way that don't reflect reality, but I think to reject it all together is kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So there's sort of a middle ground would be a balance to be struck there.
Okay, Jez, that was as long as I could cope, so sorry. Also, we're over time, and I want to tell a story pertaining to this before we go. So many years ago, my wife, before she knew me, went and saw a demonstration of Buddhist nuns that could dance, I think was the deal. It was some sort of dancing performance or whatever, but they were specifically Buddhist clergy, for lack of a better term. And near the end at one point, because this was a traveling group and they earn money for their church and everything, and so they sell some merch stuff in the form of like CDs and books and things like that, DVDs of them dancing. And so she says, like, this table here, we have CDs and DVDs and books, anything you might desire. And there's this pause as people in the audience register that the Buddhist nun just referred to anything you might desire, and this sort of little giggle comes up, and she apparently clued in eventually, and eventually was like, anything you might care to purchase.
That's great.
All right, I like that. Please email us, or else this is how Jazz will like our entire podcast. She will rule us from afar via her sophons. So write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us your thoughts on Buddhism and parent killing. Are they always allowable, or are there circumstances where you wouldn't want Buddhism? Like, say, if your parents are already dead. That one got away from me. Anyway, email us in and listen again in a week. Okay, bye.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.